Okay, today is March 18th. Yesterday was St. Patrick's Day, so it should be easy to remember. Yes. March 18th, 2013. It's an interview with Ted Tibbetts. I'm here at his home in the far west side of Madison. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Ted, so we can get the sound quality as good as possible, could you say your name and then spell your last name?
Ted Tibbetts, T-I-B-B-I-T-T-S.
Excellent, thank you. Ted, there's a few things I want to go over today. The first is maybe a little bit about your international travel. You had that page that you gave me entitled International Activities. And it looks like, at least according to this document, the first time you went overseas was in 1974. Perhaps maybe even like a year-long sabbatical to the Netherlands or something like
that? Yeah, it was actually a six-month sabbatical that I worked at the Phytotron in Wageningen on the eastern part of Netherlands. And I spent most of the time looking at factors causing lettuce tip burn. And particularly, the fellow, Dr. Bensink, that I worked with, got me involved in measuring the pressure inside of the lattissifer ducts, which I had found ruptured and caused the injury. And we were able to document in work at his laboratory that the pressures were very excessive in the lattissifers, something like six atmospheres, whereas in the rest of the tissue around it, there was only two atmospheres of pressure. And so if there's any weakness in the lattissifers, they easily ruptured and released latex into tissue, which caused the darkening or lettuce tip burn in the lettuce leaves.
Okay. So 6 months when you were there, those 6 months, was that like was it a regular 9-to-5 job?
Yes, pretty much. I was working a research day constantly there with them, yes. Monday through Friday.
Were you able to do some traveling and see the country on the weekends?
Not much in Netherlands. We did make one trip to Paris, France. My wife was not very well. She had cancer at the time and was in a wheelchair most of the time that we were there, so we didn't do much traveling.
Oh, okay. But you did take one trip to France.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that seems to have started I don't know if it started or not, but you definitely have, you know, a full page of these international activities of other places that you went. Doesn't look like every year, but it looks like maybe like every 3 or 4 years you ended up traveling. In 78, it looks like maybe Australia, New Zealand, and Japan.
And those were some meetings that were involved with the controlled environment work that I was doing. And we went to I went to an International Horticultural Congress in Australia to report on this, and our group had a special session describing our efforts at developing monitoring guidelines for controlled environments. And then following that, then I made a trip through New Zealand and up to Japan too. That gave me a contact with a fellow that ran a Phytotron in New Zealand, and he in turn invited me there for a research leave, which my next research leave was in 1981, and spent 6 months then at Palmerston North in New Zealand. Again, working on, in that case, did research into lighting for different plants and documenting what kind of lamps were most desirable and most efficient for plant growth.
Was that some of your first work in using lighting? I know it ends up becoming sort of a pretty important thing in your career.
It wasn't the first, because our controlled environment group that I started with a group of horticulturalists in 1968, and then became a group involving engineers and all kinds of plant scientists in 1976, where we were very concerned with the kind of lighting that was used in chambers and the fact that certain lighting produced a lot of heat and warmed the plants differently than other kind of lighting which didn't warm the plants. Mm-hmm. And yet it measured the same amount of lighting, but it had a very different effect on plant growth.
Mm-hmm. If I can step back for a second then just to confirm, because I think you've mentioned this in at least one of the other interviews, this controlled environment group was not just people on UW's campus, right? It was...
No, I realized the difficulty of comparing growth in different laboratories. And one person would say he was growing a crop under a certain light intensity and temperature, and yet you'd try to repeat that in another laboratory and you couldn't do it. And so in 1968, I organized, at one of our national horticulture meetings, I organized a workshop and got a group of people interested and involved, which started a series of meetings another two times a year then. We'd meet at our horticulture meetings and then one time somewhere else, working at developing guidelines and how to ensure repeatable growth. This led also to my applying to the National Science Foundation to get a group of instruments for measuring light, temperature, humidity, and carbon dioxide and air movement that I took the responsibility for it, but got the instruments and then distributed around to the different laboratories, mailed them around for them to check their measuring instruments and to calibrate their measuring instruments. This in turn led to this group recognizing the need for some real strong guidelines in how to measure and run experiments in controlled environments. And we then organized a symposium at the University of Wisconsin in I think this was 1976, and invited plant scientists from all different groups to come to this meeting and involving engineers too and growth chamber manufacturers to talk about establishing some set guidelines.
So then when you said that in 78 you gave these presentations in Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, it was presentations based on what this controlled environment group had been learning, talking about really over the last decade?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right.
And then there was quite a bit of international travel with when I became involved with NASA. In trying to help them develop controlled procedures for growing plants in long-term space bases on Moon and Mars. And I became very much involved with NASA in their life support system work, which involved one big trip to Russia into Krasnoyarsk, Siberia, where they were doing this and actually had a system set up where they grew plants and locked people up and tried to get the plants to provide all the life support for two or three people for a 3 months period. They weren't totally successful, but they certainly raise the concern and documentation for what would be necessary to keep people alive in a permanent space base.
So this trip to Russia was after the fall of the Berlin Wall, but not doesn't look like by much.
No,
April 1990. So
yes,
the wall fell in November of 89. So it's still very, either very late in the in communism or very early in.
I think it was still. Okay. I think the Berlin Wall was still up at that time.
Okay.
That was 1990. Yes.
Right. So. So yeah, if we look at most a lot of these, it looks like a lot of these international activities, as you said, was based on your work with NASA. Looks like a couple of trips to Germany in 84 and 94 were at space symposiums or space colloquium.
Yes, there was quite an active group in Europe with the European Space Agency, cooperating with the U.S. on the development of the International Space Station. And so they did have a big interest in this space activity, too.
So when you would go here, looking at these now, like most of these are, did you go to give a presentation or a lecture? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. So
usually an invited lecture at one of their symposiums.
So not an extended stay, but
no,
you know, a few days or a week or maybe something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Usually just 1 or 2 days.
Okay.
At a particular location, yes. But much of my funding for horticultural research or for plant research from the period of about 1978 on came from NASA because it fit closely to this concern for how to grow plants in controlled environments effectively and efficiently and repeatably. Mm-hmm. And so I became, and because of my early interest in this way back in the 60s when I was trying to find money for my lettuce research, and NASA had a concern for growing lettuce on the moon. They initially started that, but then they dropped their interest. But I was sitting there waiting, and so in 1978, when they became interested in putting money back into finding out how they could develop plant-growing systems in space, I was sitting there waiting for them. And was instrumental in organizing a couple workshops to develop what crops they might use and what their research needs would be. Mm-hmm. One session was in Chicago and one in Mountain View, California. Two workshops that I organized for them.
Mm-hmm. So, Ted, when you would, whether you're giving these workshops or presentations here in the U.S. or... you know, overseas. Did you have a standard presentation that you gave, or did it?
No, it varied.
Okay.
But each time I developed a presentation that fit the particular symposium or workshop that they were organizing.
And did you use those opportunities, whether it be here in the States or overseas, to either try to network or try to build? Continued or stronger relationships in this control environment work?
Oh, very definitely. And then later, we held a symposium at Madison in 1990, I think it was. In 1994, developed an international lighting in controlled environments conference at Madison that I organized. And this was very much an international activity, and we had about 150 people at the session. But my contacts throughout the world helped me make invitations to particular people, and we got funding for National Science Foundation and USDA to support bringing people to this conference. And this involved everyone working then at lighting, and just the start of the use of LEDs for lighting in plant growth environments. And I'd like to come back to the use of LEDs because I hold, along with four or five other people, a patent for the use of light-emitting diodes for plant growth. And it all stemmed from a meeting here at Madison. I was invited by the engineering dean to cooperate in a proposal that he had with NASA to develop a Wisconsin Center for Automation and Robotics, with the engineering school doing much of the robotics work. But he asked me to join in the proposal to develop a automated plant growth chambers and to be part of that meeting, of that group. And I remember the first session that we had in 1986. We sat down with the different company representatives, five or six company representatives that Dean Bollinger of the engineering school had invited to participate in this conference. And they sat down with the group of us as researchers, and he had each of the researchers tell what they were doing, and then each of the industry people what kinds of things they had to that might be of interest to research at the campus. And one group from Dodgeville working on light-emitting diodes spoke up and said that he had some very bright red lights that are more efficient, twice as efficient as any fluorescent lamp. And would this be of any interest? And I immediately reacted because plants need and use red light more effectively than any other light for photosynthesis. And if he had a much more efficient lighting source, this is of considerable interest to plant growth people. And so I said, yes, we would like to work with those. And so he provided me with some LED lamps. And we began some studies in the Biotron with this. And this has triggered just a very big interest in lighting for plant growth. And I was just recently at a conference at Lafayette, Indiana. And I believe a third of the conference was talking about light-emitting diodes. This was a conference on just controlled environment plant growth, involving engineering groups and research groups and USDA groups, government, different government groups. So our light-emitting diode activity led to a patent that we got, which was assigned to this silicon sensor company in Dodgeville. And they were to give 10% of the royalties to the university, to the engineering school, for studies that we were doing on our automated plant growth chambers. But we never did get very much money out of it, but except the notoriety of that we were involved in developing the LED light.
So to confirm, it was that meeting in '86, and it was someone from this company in Dodgeville.
Yes.
Okay.
That presented the idea to us.
Okay. Is it around that time, the 86, when you, well, first off, I know you have a piece of paper there. Are there other things you want to say about LED or, your experiments with lighting before we maybe take us in a different direction?
Only thing, the LEDs have not been found to be much more efficient than other lamps. They have been found to be as efficient as the best lamps. The best lamp, most efficient lamp, has been a high-pressure sodium lamp, a little more efficient than any fluorescent lamps for plant lighting. But LEDs are about as efficient, but they are much more flexible. They do provide this maximum light in the red light region. And we did use this later for an experiment that we did fly on with plants on the International Space Station, on a shuttle flight.
Were you there to watch the shuttle take off, or were you just...
No, yes, watch the takeoff and watch it come down. We had through the Wisconsin Center for Space Automation and Robotics, WICSAR as we called it, we had a series of experiments, first to make sure that the plant growing system would operate effectively under weightlessness. And then the most significant flight we flew was to document that plants could photosynthesize under weightlessness and store food. And we used a small potato leaves with a piece of attached stem that were flown in, five of these little leaves that were flown in a small capsule for 16 days. And if you take the potato leaf from a plant and plant this little piece of stem in the leaf, you will get a tuber forming in the axis of the leaf very quickly, within 2 weeks. So we flew this experiment and had these five leaves, and they developed little tubers about the size of the end of your thumb in the 16 days. And then we very carefully, when we got the flight back, we analyzed the tubers to compare them to similar plants growing in a control laboratory on the ground. And there were no significant differences. And so we have the credit for the first crop plant grown in space. There had been many efforts to grow wheat in the Russian space station, but they never could get the wheat to set. They could get the plants to grow and flower, but they never got any seeds to set. So we were the first people to show that you could put light onto a leaf, translocate that photosynthates down into a storage organ, and produce a product crop under weightlessness.
That's great.
Yeah.
So it was during this time, I think the late 80s, early 90s, that you were not only a professor, but were director of the Biotron, is that?
Yes. I had used the Biotron significantly for this kind of all of my research. In fact, I think I did have the first paid plant experiment in the Biotron in 1968. And so used it over the years, was on the Biotron Advisory Committee for 10 years in the 70s and 80s, and then was asked to be the director of the Biotron toward the end of my career in 1987 to 92.
Is that something that a dean asks you to do? Is that?
Yeah, Dean Bach was dean of the graduate. The Biotron was run by the graduate school, and so Dean Bach made these decisions and asked me to run that. Mm-hmm. And I was there for 5 years.
So what's the differences between being a researcher with experiments inside the Biotron and being the person in charge of it?
Well, the big thing was, challenge was meeting the needs of new kinds of research, because it was developed in 1960s, mm-hmm. And so 30 years later, research needs had changed, a lot more pointed toward animal research. But just the challenges of keeping a big facility like that operating, and something that you believed in and loved. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the period running the Biotron.
You say you love it. Did it give you sort of a better appreciation? Again, you had been a paid sort of a renter of it. Did it give you a better appreciation of how big it was to actually run something like that? Give you appreciation of the complexity?
Oh, it certainly did. And the challenges of keeping experiments isolated, making certain that things that might be toxic to another organism were not transmitted from one place to another. It had some big challenges, and there were some changes of retirements of people at the time that I had to get some new people in to replace them.
So you had, there was a staff underneath you at Biotron?
Yes. There was a staff about people that interacted regularly with any new researchers and met and any problems the new researchers had, interacted constantly with these people. Then there was a staff to keep the place running, the temperatures and the light and the humidity, and just the control of the system. And then there was staff to work closely with the researchers, like a plant-oriented person and an animal-oriented person, would help do some day-by-day jobs for them if necessary.
So were these all academic staff or classified staff or graduate students?
They were all classified staff.
All classified staff.
All classified staff.
And it was turnover in those positions, you said, that had a bit of a challenge for you when you were running
there? Yes.
Now, while you were director of the Biotron, did you have experiments going on inside of it?
Yes, I would have had, yes, very definitely. But they would work then with the staff, and I wouldn't.
So the graduate students who were assisting in the research would work with the staff?
Yes. I think it was during this period that we identified that the ethylene glycol that was used as a coolant in the facility at times would leak, and never thought too much of it, but suddenly a researcher was having problems growing cucumbers and in some rooms but not other rooms, and through work one of my students did, we were able to identify that it was the ethylene glycol that was causing the problem. Hmm. And thus just made, there wasn't much to do with it because certain rooms, the air handling systems were contaminated with this, and just slowly the problem decreased, but it took not months, but years. And so certain rooms we just kept the cucumbers out of, and as the problem slowly had decreased.
So it was specifically cucumbers? Was it any other vegetable that was?
I don't remember. I think we did with, we were able to see it on, maybe it was beans with high concentrations, where we put a dish of ethylene glycol in a chamber with the plants and could see an effect.
So it looks like you were still faculty until 95.
Yes, I retired at the end of 95.
So was 5 years, 87 to 92, it says you were director of the Biotron, was 5 years enough time to be director? Did you decide at that point?
Yes, and I know, and then there was a change of staff. And in the dean's office. And they asked me to leave the Biotron. Okay. I was relieved from my duties.
Were you fine with that?
Yes, I had enough other work to be doing, so that I was so much involved with this space experimentation at that time with Wixar and involvement with NASA and in many advisory committees for NASA that I hadn't. It wasn't that my life was became devoid of activity. NASA used me as a very much on all of their advisory committees having to do with any of their life support activities, whether it had to do with their committees proving life support research at different universities or advising on facilities that they built at Kennedy and at Johnson for life support. And I was on at Ames in California at Mountain View, California. I was constantly asked to be on their advisory committees, and this would be a one-day activity usually, but a lot of travel involved in this.
Okay, so NASA would travel, would
pay all the travel,
pay you to go to Florida or California, or
yes.
Was there work in Texas too, or was it?
The Houston, Texas at Johnson Spacecraft Center. And then for one, when they did go to the moon and came back, they asked me to serve on advisory committee on what plant testing should be done with the soil they brought back to try to grow plants in the soil that they brought back from the moon. So I was had advisor to the Lunar Receiving Laboratory at Texas, and they were concerned with the possibility there might be some exotic organisms brought back in that soil, and so I was involved in helping set up the test procedures to ensure that the material was safe to work with.
So did you actually get to see the moon soil?
No, I never did. Okay. I saw some of the rocks. Yes, I've seen the soil, but I never really handled it. Well, they didn't want anybody handling it. But I've seen some of the materials.
So they would take measurements, and you would look at those readings?
I didn't. I was only involved in setting up the procedures they would follow. Okay. Once they brought it back, I was not involved in the testing. Mm-hmm.
So, you retired
end
of 95. So, why was the fall of 95 a good time to?
At that time, my wife was actually not well. She had a form of Alzheimer's, and I was just in the throes of going to have to put her into, I was having to take care of my wife. And so I had 42, 43 years of activity and decided that it was time to retire.
But it sounds like you've at least stayed involved in controlled environment.
I did not have any students left when I retired, and my funding was primarily at that time was with WCSR, with this Wisconsin Center in Engineering, and so I did not have any big research activity that was not easy to slowly close up during 1995, and so when I retired. I did not have much involvement in the department, but did maintain an involvement with my controlled environment group called NCR 101. It was a regional committee but involved nationally, and we met twice a year, actually. Once a year with the NCR committee in March. Somewhere around the country, and it was a 3 or 4 day meeting. And I've continued to be involved with that over the years, and even this year I went to the meeting at Lafayette, Indiana just a few weeks ago, primarily just to visit with old friends, and not, I could not contribute very much.
Mm-hmm.
No research activity to the group.
So, what were you, I want to back up just briefly, because we usually try to ask a little bit about your involvement into the part, in the department you were in. Did you ever have leadership roles in the, what would be, horticulture, right?
Is that what you're... I was in horticulture. I ran the horticulture farm for 5 years, right. Man, director of this. I was head of the hort building committee when we put on an addition to that with agronomy, about double the space in horticulture and agronomy. I was chairman of that building committee. And, of course, in charge of seminars regularly over the period.
But never, like, department chair?
Chair, no. I opted not to take the department chairmanship. I had many offers from around the country to be department chair during the periods of 70s, 80s, and 80s. And I was so involved in what was going on in here in Wisconsin and with NASA that I opted out all of these invitations.
Mm-hmm. So there were chances for you to go and do research and teach other places?
Yes. Oh, I had Ohio State, Penn State, Washington State, many different invitations over the years.
Was there any that you pursued to a point where you considered?
Nope. I was too involved and too interested in what I was doing at Wisconsin. Even though much of my NASA activity I could have moved with me, but except for the direct funding of the research I was doing.
The other thing you have on one of your list here is your service to campus, and primarily I'm interested in, I think you were on the Steenbach Library Committee at one point and then the University Library Committee at one point. So, since the archives is part of the library, I'm just sort of interested into, you know, why you chose those committees to do some university service.
Well, I was asked to serve on them, and in both cases, I served for a couple of years, and then I became chairman of the Steenbach Library Committee for 2 years. And then over that period was working with the University Library Committee, and they in turn asked me to serve on their committee, and then I was chairman of that committee. This was at a time when computers were just coming in, and I tended to encourage it, but not force it in any way. But there tended to be a reluctance of both library staff and many library members to bring computers in and have computers replace books, because many people like to read a book and scan the bookshelves for books. And there was an interesting reluctance to computerize the library system back in, this was in the late 70s and 80s, I think, early 80s.
You know, Ted, I think I am, I'm not sure I have anything else I want to ask. I know you have some notes and things that you've taken. I want to make sure that you have the last word. So is there anything on your mind that you want to ask before we conclude the sessions?
Not ask as much as just make a comment. I made a mistake by coming back to my STEAM institution, a mistake in the way that it slowed my early research development. Mm-hmm. But maybe that was good in a way, because it gave me a chance to sit back and really work at things. But on the other hand, Wisconsin has been a fantastic place to be in teaching and research because of the flexibility I was permitted to have in what I wanted to teach, what I and the research direction that I wanted to take, as long as it was consistent with the reasonable mission of the university. And at times I was sort of embarrassed with all of the activity with NASA, because it didn't directly affect the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. but indirectly the offshoots of it in lighting and controlled environments, I'm sure it has been a support to the University of Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, Ted, I do want to ask one more question, sort of a final capstone question. And so I think you've alluded to it in a lot of your answers, but what do you think your legacy is, either, you know, here on campus or in the larger scientific community?
I think my legacy is in controlled environment growing of plants and making these facilities more useful, more dependable, and more accurate for people to work.
So in the standardization, trying to standardize...
And to assist in getting useful and repeatable research results for people.
All right. Ted, thank you very much. I've appreciated
it. It's been a pleasure, Troy, and I appreciate very much you working with me and doing this.
And this concludes our interviews with Ted Tibbetts.